In nature, a wildfire is one of the most devastating natural forces. It burns hot and fast and leaves little behind but ash and char. Or so it seems. Very soon after the fire passes through the forest, life returns. Shrubs and weeds that clogged the forest floor have burned away, leaving space for new trees, grasses, and flowers to emerge and flourish. Habitats are created, bringing new insects, birds, reptiles, and mammals. A cancer diagnosis can feel like a wildfire, our bodies becoming this new, fire-clarified landscape. For some, cancer changes utterly everything. For others, cancer brings greater clarity and purpose. And some of us are still searching for what life after a cancer diagnosis will look like. Welcome to The Burn. We are exploring stories of life and transformation following a breast cancer diagnosis. I'm April Stearns, the founder and editor of Wildfire Magazine and the host of this podcast. Today, we're going to hear a love story that I just had the privilege of re-releasing. My guest today, Catherine Sumner, first published this piece with Wildfire back in 2019. Now, 5 years later, I've just published it again in our first ever Queer in Cancerland issue. Catherine's the first writer that I'm hosting from our new issue. A tiny little note before we dive in that this episode does contain some salty language. After all, cancer and how it affects our relationships is salty itself. So just a heads up, if that is not something that is the right time for you, then we will see you on another episode. All right, without further ado, let me introduce you to today's guest. Catherine Sumner is a former federal lobbyist. She was diagnosed at 31 with DCIS stage 3, HER2 positive. Catherine is a NOLA native. She maintains residences in the DC Beltway and San Francisco Bay Area. She is the mama to two very good doggos and the wife to a cop. Hey, Catherine, welcome to The Burn.
Thank you. It's lovely to be here.
No, I'm so glad to have you here. So as I said, you are reading a story that has now been published in Wildfire twice. It's called Strange Bedfellows and was featured in the 2019 Love and Intimacy issue and again in the 2024 Queer in Cancerland issue. After you read to us, we'll chat. Those of you listening, stay tuned to the very end for a writing prompt inspired by today's episode. All right, Catherine, I'll let you take it away.
Thank you. Ah, loving cancer, what strange bedfellows. In March of 2010, I was 31 years old and diagnosed with breast cancer. Fast forward 1 year out from that life-changing diagnosis, and now I was beat up from cancer. I was burned from radiation, bald from chemo, and emotionally shattered. But that diagnosis and the person who was diagnosed was gone. I was free of that, sort of. I was given a positive prognosis. So like any 32-year-old lesbian, I said, fuck it, I'm going to Dinah Shore. For those unfamiliar, Dinah Shore is a weekend getaway and music festival catering to the lesbian community that takes place annually in Palm Springs. I gathered three of my friends who had taken turns taking care of me over the past year. They sat with me at chemo. They held my hand at appointments. Brought me Mexican food in the hospital. They are my rocks. We booked our flights to Palm Springs from DC, and my official FU cancer tour began. Before going, though, I met someone. Unplanned and completely inconvenient for what I had planned to do at Dinah Shore. I told her, M, my whole cancer story. She didn't care. I practically challenged her to stick around. She made the choice. And years later, I would tell her she bought low and that my stock had greatly increased in value as I moved further from my diagnosis. In her defense, I had an amazing weave and my blazer covered my port and how that radiation glow in the right season could totally pass for a regular sunburn. So we continued this adventure. We talked every day, discussing life and how our career shaped the people we are. And then came Dinah Shore, cross country to the lesbian Mecca. Before I went, Em asked me if it was okay if she came along too. I was in DC, she lived in San Francisco, so hell, why not? I guess I'm into this girl. Next thing I know, I have a real girlfriend. That doesn't sound too crazy, right? Girl meets girl, falls in love, relationship. Well, that was never my MO. Before M, I was, how to say, a player. Yep, no sugarcoating that. I was known as the Samantha of my group. Having a steady girl was not my thing. That was the first thing that cancer changed about me, for the better. For so long, it was, I don't need anybody. I don't want the drama. I want freedom. Cancer comes along and whammo, there's drama, no freedom. And I definitely leaned hard on my friends. Everything that made me, me, was gone, including my troublemakers. You know who I'm talking about? The boobs. Oh, my boobs. They have gotten me into and out of more trouble than I have room for in this story. As a femme lesbian, the girls were part of my identity. Cancer, the great equalizer that it is, resulted in a breast reduction on one side and a heavy-handed lumpectomy on the other. Somehow, they evened out enough. I had an incredible surgeon to rock a string bikini at Dinah. With my identity and self-esteem intact, the relationship with M progressed at a lesbian pace. For those not in the know, that means fast. I let her into my cancer journey more and more. After 5 months of dating, she flew to DC and sat with me at a Herceptin infusion. I had to know, did she really have the guts to stick around? She did. She held my hand as the nurse did the countdown to jam a needle into my port. M handled it all like a champ. That moment really solidified it. I was going to marry this woman. In November of 2011, M asked me to move in with her. Every fiber of my being told me not to. My doctors were in DC, my job, my friends, my entire life. But she was in San Francisco and had quite quickly become my world. Like jumping off a cliff, I took a deep breath and said, yep, I'm doing this. And that was it. I picked up my life and moved across the country. Now I still work in DC and am there often enough that it actually doesn't feel like I left. My doctors are still there. My friends are still there. Thankfully, I'm a Gemini, so this cross-country life actually works for me. In June of 2014, Em and I were married at City Hall in San Francisco. Life goes on. Em was my rock when my mother died too. I was Em's rock on the daily as she witnessed the horrors of humanity through her career in law enforcement. We've been through it all, I thought. At my urging, when Em turned 40, I nagged her to get a mammogram. Cops are stubborn, in case you didn't know. She had spent the last 8 years walking beside me on my cancer journey. She had actually thought she was playing the odds, like there's no way both of us would have cancer. Unfortunately, she was wrong. In January of 2018, Em was diagnosed early stage ER positive breast cancer. She spent months agonizing over what to do. She was angry, sad, then angry again, then stubborn. Refusing to do anything, just standing still. Remember how I said I was brash? I had to threaten to leave her because I couldn't bear watching her decline from breast cancer because she chose not to acknowledge it. She relented. Em had a bilateral mastectomy in May 2018. There were times when I had said to her, "You don't get it," when we would fight about skin anxiety. She would ask why I always thought every pain was cancer coming back. I would tell her through tears, you're lucky you don't have this fear. Her cancer brought us together in a way that I never could have thought. We understood each other better and then worse. We dealt with our individual diagnosis differently and with each other's differently. I was glad I was able to advocate for her. In a weird way, repay the favor, to be there at appointments with her, to hold her hand. 8 years before, I was forced to be vulnerable, and here she was, vulnerable like I was. Cancer changed our relationship. We were more equal. We fought battles together and individually. It's us against cancer. there was nobody else I'd rather have in my corner, and there was nobody that I would have been better in her corner. I know that for sure. Even warriors need a rest. I know that now. But when we said in sickness and in health, and for better or worse, we damn well meant it.
Mm. I love that. Thank you so much, Catherine. What a beautiful story. All right. We are going to take a quick break here. We'll let you take your a sip of water or catch your breath, and we'll hear a testimonial. And when we come back, we'll dive into the behind the scenes.
Hey, this is April. Every week here on The Burn, I say there is no place on the planet like a wildfire writing workshop. And I want you to know that I mean that. I mean it from the deepest part of my core. And that's because there is no place where young people with breast cancer gather together and bear themselves on the page and then share it. Again and again, people tell me that they didn't even know how much they needed the writing workshop and the writing prompts until they came and they wrote. So have you dreamed about writing your own essay to submit to Wildfire? Maybe you have a piece of your cancer story that you want to share, but you need help getting started with it. Or maybe you just need time to be accountable, to show up weekly for yourself and for others in a community. Sign up for our Sparks class. You'll find it to be the safe place that you need to get your ideas sparking for your next essay, your next poem, or maybe just to do the healing that you need to do. Head to wildfirecommunity.org/workshops to sign up for the next one. I can't wait to write with you.
Hi, my name is Libby Riley. I live in Baldwin, Missouri. I was diagnosed with stage 1A invasive ductal carcinoma in July of 2020 when I was 51 years old. I was never a writer before I was diagnosed, but I started using journaling to keep my friends and family posted over the past 2 years. I also started to use it as an outlet for myself to express my emotions and process what I've been through. When I learned about Wildfire magazine after my diagnosis, I was amazed by the contributors' pieces. I loved that it was a way for breast cancer patients, warriors, thrivers, previvors, and survivors to share their experiences and stories with the world. Listening to those contributors on the Burn podcast has also been very inspiring. I was a contributor to Wildfire twice before I decided to participate in April's 6-week writing workshop. I do not regret my decision at all. It was an excellent way for me to meet others from the breast cancer community in a small and intimate space, but it also gave me a safe space to share my feelings without being worried about what I was saying or how I was saying it. It was so empowering to feel seen and heard, knowing that the others in the workshop could relate on some level. I was amazed at some of the pieces I produced by simply listening to April share other written essays and poems with us, and by using her writing prompts. The workshop helped me find my voice further, and I know that it is essential for others to hear it. Thank you, April, The Burn Podcast, and Wildfire Magazine, for a great opportunity and a way for me to continue to share my story.
Thank you so much for that love, Libby. It's so nice to hear your voice today. All right, turning back to you, Catherine, thank you again for reading to us your story, Strange Bedfellows.
Oh, you know, it's a pleasure to share this and kind of tell the world my story.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, let's start with an update, if there is any. You obviously wrote this quite some time ago. So any changes feel relevant to share?
I mean, no, like we every day, you know, it's another health scare. Like when you get to be our ages, I'm 45, Em is 46. You know, we were both diagnosed young. You know, every pain, every, you know, doctor appointment, every like, oh, well, what's this? This is new. I don't know. You know, it's a different relationship perspective when you're both cancer survivors?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So it's been 14 years, I think, if I'm doing the math right, since your diagnosis. Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah. 14 years. So first of all, congratulations on living 14 years past that terrible day that probably felt like the end. And what would you say, if anything, what is survivorship like for you now? Is it part of your daily living? Is it on your mind? Tell us about that.
Well, so let's start at that origin point. When I was first diagnosed with stage 3B HER2 positive breast cancer in 2010 at 31 years old, it was my doctor sat me down and flat out said, the odds are stacked against you. And I did the math because I'm a data person. The survival rate at that point was about 30%. So I just lived my life and said, you know what? This could be it. I may have a year, I may have five, so I'm going to do what I damn well please, makes me happy. And that's what I do. Even now, I live my life in a way to have no regrets. And sometimes that regrets means doing stupid things. But I'd much rather do stupid things and regret that than have that feeling of, oh, I wish I shoulda, coulda, mm-hmm. what had happened if.
Absolutely. Do you have an example of the latest, like, you know, I'm just going to take the plunge and see where the cards fall kind of, you know, experience?
I would say I left my career as a lobbyist. And after January 6th and during the pandemic, I just said, you know, life is short. I'm not going to keep going through this route. It's not bringing me the kind of joy, and I didn't have the kind of passion that I had when I first started. I felt like I had paid my dues, and I got tired of going cross country. And I said, you know, the thing that makes me most happy is museum work. I had always served on boards of museums, and one of my undergrads is American history. And I just said, you know what? I'm going to apply for this one particular job that really just spoke to me. And now I'm a curator at a military museum. And And it was just something that I did specifically to honor U.S. veterans.
Mm-hmm. I like that. And also just like following your particular passion, you know, and knowing that something wasn't working anymore for you and being able to make that pivot, which can be really, really scary. But I love your attitude of, let's just see what happens. Like, it's fine.
Yeah. For me, that was something that I did that I just felt like, what would I do for a job if I could do it for free? You know, like if that was a place that I would volunteer, well, why not? You know, why not get paid to do it too and bring Absolutely. My expertise? So that's, I mean, now I realize that that is a privilege that not everybody has. I get that. Bills need to be paid. But for me and in my position, that was just something that I wanted to do.
Oh, I think that's great. So turning back to your story, you know, how devastating for your relationship that you both would have to go through breast cancer. You both would have to go through it on the younger side. What would you say was one of the most challenging aspects of you both experiencing cancer? Or did it only just make it easier that you had already done it?
Well, to borrow some of my wife's terminology, it was basically like I did the recon. I had already gone through it first. Part of what I lobbied for, one of my major clients was in cancer research. So I had the statistics, I had the info, I had the personal experience. So when she was diagnosed, and I hesitate to tell her story, but from my perspective, is she's a cop. She's very stubborn. And she kind of just buried her head in the sand and was like, no, this isn't happening. As almost like she could will it away, right?
Yeah.
And I dealt with it very differently. I'm very much like head on, like we're going to go in and fuck some shit up and leave and get this mission done. And she was just like, nope, it's not happening. I'm not doing anything. Well, months went by. And I was like, no, I'm not sitting back watching you do this. Like, we're going to do shit my way and we're going to go through this and we're going to beat it. And then we're going to come out better on the other end. And I don't think, as strong as some women are, I don't think she could have gotten to the point where she did without having a raging bitch like me in the background pushing her, saying, no, this is what we're doing. And it's really funny because everybody looks at me and, you know, I'm from New Orleans, I'm fun, I'm happy, I'm all these great things, right? And then she's just like this cop, you know, this badass. In the background, I'm the one pushing her and poking at her, saying, this is what we're doing and this is how we're going to fix it. So I kind of took on the role as her crisis manager and advocated for her. And I think in a way that only a fellow breast cancer survivor could advocate. Like, I caught mistakes at the hospital. I caught errors. I talked to the surgeon about where to put the scars because you only know what you know, right? And those things had never occurred to her. And that is something that I'm truly passionate about. Like, anyone who's diagnosed with breast cancer, get yourself someone who's gone through it before. Team buddy system. Because you only know what you know. And how can you possibly be expected to think about all these other things further down the line when you can't even think about what's ahead of you tomorrow? Mm-hmm. So I was there. I did the recon and I held her hand and said, we're walking through this fire.
I really love that she had you and that you had her through it too. It sounds like you guys really make a good team and you complement each other's, you know, strengths and weaknesses very well. And no place to see that more glaringly than going through illness and together. I'm really glad you guys have each other.
Yeah. Well, like you said, it's a team. And I think that's something very unique in lesbian relationships, especially when you have two alpha females. And it's like, okay, one of you has to take a back seat, right? And we take turns. One of us is going to be in Kevlar up front, and the other one's going to have the six. You know, we just, it's truly a balance. And I think that is something unique when you have two women in a relationship.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm glad that you have brought it around to the uniqueness of your relationship, because I wanted to ask you, and obviously we just published your story again in our Queer and Cancerland issue. One of the reasons we wanted to do this issue is that there is still work to be done with regard to people going through a cancer experience, not just younger, but also younger who identify as queer. Did you feel like there was areas that were harder because of your relationship? I'm hearing a lot of benefits to it, but I'm wondering if there was some on the other side.
Well, when I went through the actual diagnosis and the beginning of treatment, the chemo, the surgery, the radiation, I was single. Mm-hmm. And for me, that was the way to go. Now, if you're asking if I faced any issues with my medical team as a gay woman, I am very proud to say of Virginia Hospital Center that I had no issues whatsoever. I am so lucky and so blessed. My doctors were great. My doctors were trying to talk me into preserving my fertility, which I chose not to. Like, who wants to carry on this genetic code? I have heard the horror stories of my friends, and I just stood dumbfounded most of the time. Like, my team was amazing. I did this thing during chemo infusion that I called pole dancing. I take my little pole And I'd go around from chair to chair and we'd gossip and we'd talk and we'd bring in other, you know, like sweet treats to share. I brought in my priest. Like my team at Virginia Hospital Center was amazing. Now, with mixed team, and I won't even name that hospital, with mixed team, she didn't have chemo or radiation. She did have surgery. And she presents as very masculine. Now, I did suggest to her that she have a bilateral mastectomy because given her precedence, her history with this sort of thing, I was like, you are not going to want to go in for scans. You are not going to want reconstruction. So my advice to her was bilateral mastectomy. And her surgeon agreed, but her surgeon made a comment like, oh, this is probably what you wanted anyway.
Okay.
Now, when you make a comment like that in front of a New Orleans girl who's also Sicilian American, it is not going to end well for anyone. So I made my position very clear with that doctor that cancer is not a choice that anybody wants. And that having a major surgery is not a choice under these conditions. This is cancer. We're not talking about how you perceive how she identifies. By the way, she. So it was just, and that was in California, whereas my experience was in Virginia. So you just never know what kind of biases are going to come in from your doctors or your healthcare team. But it's something that, again, if you're newly diagnosed, get yourself a buddy. Get yourself someone who's going to say, oh, hell no, and speak up for you when you can't.
I really like that advice. Do you have places that you recommend others find their cancer buddy? Or, you know, it kind of feels like yours a little bit fell into your lap and vice versa. But have you maybe mentored others? Or I'll let you fill in the blank. What would be your advice there?
Well, okay, so it's kind of weird, like in the gay community. Everybody, there's kind of like this weird like phone tree situation. Like, oh, my friend of a friend of a friend who had breast cancer. So I get like these weird calls, right? And I've had kind of like an interesting life. And when I get calls from people that I don't normally hear from, and I see their name come up, I'm like, oh, somebody has breast cancer or someone's parents died. It is one of those two. And I hate being the resident expert on those things in my, you know, in my peripheral. But I'm also glad that I can. Like, I'm glad that my obnoxiousness, my walkthrough fire, HBIC energy can do some good in the world.
Mm-hmm.
So,
oh, 100%.
I think, you know, you just need to find someone who knows someone and who's willing to step up. And I will say that's, you know, it's so hard to say how people are going to go through their individual journeys, right? So, like, I am very open, obviously, with my journey. My wife is not. I celebrate my cancerversary. I mean, celebrate. Like, we go to Hawaii and celebrate this. Because I feel like any day that I'm on this side of the dirt is like a good day, right? Because it wasn't promised to me. Mm-hmm. My wife on the other side is like, I don't need a cancerversary. I don't need to celebrate this. This was not something that really affected me. And I'm like, anytime you hear the words, you have cancer, it affects you. So people like me are happy to give advice. People like my wife are like, I don't want to talk about it. So my advice is, if you're out there struggling, call me. I will help you. April will put out my number or my email. I will help you. I will be that resident HBIC who will go in and fuck shit up if your shit is fucked up. So let me help you.
Heck yeah. I love that. We'll definitely link to you in the show notes. But I love what you just said too about your experience in survivorship and your wife's experience in survivorship being totally different, because I also want to just acknowledge how varied these experiences are. You know, as many different people get cancer, there are that many different experiences of it. And there is no one wrong or right way. It is just about, you know, complementing how you want to go through it so you don't feel alone, even if you are opting out of certain supports because you prefer a little bit more solitary experience of it.
Yeah. You know, calm waters run deep, right? And my wife is very stoic. Mm-hmm. And just because she's not like loud and out there about her cancer journey doesn't mean that hers was not as deep for her as it was for me. Like, yes, her diagnosis was, you know, if you have to say, better than mine, right? Like she was early stage, but it doesn't mean that it didn't affect her as much, right? Mm-hmm. Anytime you hear the words, you have cancer, that's a change. Like, heart stop, period. That's a deciding time for you. Because you will always have before cancer, after cancer. And just as many different types of cancer as there are out there, there are a million ways to respond to them.
Exactly. And there's no wrong or right way about it. There's just differences. And each person has to make the call on what those are going to be in terms of themselves. But I love your advice to get a buddy, because you're right. You don't know what you don't know. And having someone who's just a few steps ahead of you to say, hey, you might want to ask about XYZ can be the difference between more trauma and maybe, you know, I'm putting easy in quotation marks, but, you know, an easier experience perhaps.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of like the women's rights movement, right? Like, as women, we stand on the shoulders of the women who came before us in our industries.
Yep.
I think as a woman, we owe that to our fellow women. We help those. We list those. We engage those. I mean, I'm not burning the ladder behind me. I'm building more rungs.
Exactly. Well, and I think, you know, that's going to be a really great place for us to end, and just acknowledging how powerful it is that you're here telling your story today. You're staying visible, because I think that at a certain point too in survivorship, we have a choice, you know, whether we want to continue to speak out or be visible to other people going through it. And there are way more people who are, you know, first couple of years out perhaps, or, you know, freshly diagnosed. And so to have you out here 14 years out is not only incredibly hopeful, but you just have more, you know, more now, right? And you know how things are shaken out. So I'm just, thank you for still being in cancer land as much as you are.
Oh, well, like I said, it's a community, right? It's like the worst club that you're a member of.
Exactly.
But we all have to lift each other up. And I feel like that is my obligation as a woman and as a human who shares this earth with billions of people. You know, I was raised with a motto from my father who said, the Sumner rule. Always leave people, places, and things better than you found them. And that's what I try to live by.
Mm-hmm. I love that. I just got a little chill. Thank you for that. So you said that you're open to being contacted. Do you want to share your email aloud right now? And we'll also link to it.
So my email address is csumner78@yahoo.com. And you can find me on all the socials under the same name.
Perfect. We'll definitely link. And I just have one PS of a question for you, Catherine. Have you returned to Dinosaur?
Is it still happening? No. It is still happening. I have aged out of that. And I'm pretty sure my wife would actually blow a gasket if I had even considered it. No. At 45, my dinosaur days are over.
And that's okay. Rest in peace, the dinosaur days. Well, Catherine, thank you so much for being here and for chatting with me. You read your story, Strange Bedfellows, and those of you listening, you can find that in the latest Wildfire, the 2024 Queer in Cancer Land. And I'm April Stearns. You've been listening to The Burn. The Burn is a production of Wildfire Magazine, where we share breast cancer stories from young people like you've never read or heard before. We also strive to inspire you to write your story like you've never written it before. Stay to the end for a writing prompt inspired by today's chat. Our producer is Bill Smith of Shoe Production, and our production assistant is Monica Haro. If you want more on the life-changing transformation to be had from telling your breast cancer stories, please visit us at wildfirecommunity.org, where you'll find a copy of the issue shared in today's episode, our 40-plus archived issues, and you can take a writing workshop with me. There's no place on the planet like a wildfire writing workshop, and I want you to experience it for yourself. Discover how to write your way back to yourself, write your way to reclaiming your body and your story. And don't forget to subscribe to The Burn and listen to it wherever you go. So here is your writing prompt. I want you to set your timer for 8 minutes and write without stopping or editing yourself. The prompt is, cancer changes I've experienced for the better. Cancer changes I've experienced for the better. This goes back to Catherine's story and some of the things that shifted for her. And she's right, cancer changes everything, but not everything is necessarily worse. So I want you to dig deep, find those changes that were for the better, see what needs to come up and where it will take you. And if you find that you write best with a good writing prompt, I've got tons more for you over at wildfirecommunity.org/free. Happy writing. Thanks for listening. Until next time, take good care.